Say he's a Navy veteran? Well, all right, we'll let him in the studio anyways. Let him in. Let him in. It's okay. We'll forget that. Greetings to the brightest audience in the nation. I am not Bob Enyard, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic anti-choice talk show host, and pastor of Denver Bible Church. I am Doug McBurney, host of the Weekly Worldview out at theweeklyworldview.com. Be sure to go check that out. I'll be sitting in today as Bob is on another secret mission to pull the world to the right. And I'm joined in studio today by one Paul Molesky.
Thanks, Doug. It's great to be here today. It's an honor.
Good to see you, Paul. I love the T-shirt, the sweatshirt you've got on. Now, Paul is a Navy veteran. Are we allowed to say that?
Yes, you're allowed.
Okay. Now, most of what Paul did for his whole career is so deeply classified that you have to pull out layer after layer of intelligence community in order to just get an idea of what he did. So we can't talk too much about what you did. Particularly.
Well, I don't know if it's quite that
specific,
but I still can't tell you.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask about anything like that, but let me bounce this story off you. Before we get into anything serious, I have a story from Yarmouth, Maine, from the Associated Press, Mr. Molesky. The Maine Forest Service says the giant elm tree named Herbie was 217 years old when he was cut down last month there in Yarmouth, Maine. Now, what's wrong with that sentence?
Well,
you haven't had the benefit of having been able to read the story.
No, I haven't.
What's wrong with that sentence? They say the tree was 217 years old when he was cut down last month.
Well, I would not refer to a tree as a he.
Well, there it is. Now, look at that. And Paul says he never did this before. You're a natural, Paul. Now, most Associated Press reporters, most journalism school graduates, you can't get them to refer to a fetus as a person, but when they write a story about a tree, they're willing to call the tree a he.
Yes, they'll kill a human being, but if you touch that tree, by golly.
Well, they're very sad about this tree, and it is sad, don't get me wrong. A 217-year-old elm tree, it's a tragedy that tree has been lost. Now, here's what happened, Paul. It was a 110-foot tall elm tree. That's a big elm tree. Now, it survived 14 bouts of Dutch elm disease, but eventually the fungal disease has claimed the life of the tree, which was cut down on January 19th. Wouldn't that be whom was cut down? Didn't they refer to him as he in the first paragraph?
It could be a she.
Well, they say he, and I would say whom was cut down January 19th. Anyway, we're sad to see Herbie go, but we're glad it wasn't murder. It was natural causes. All right. So, now, I want to get into some personhood news, because personhood is the big story around here, Paul, as you well know.
Yes.
But I want to start with some good news. We've got some great news out of Lucasville, Ohio, again, from our good friends at the Associated Press. Ohio, today, this very day, executed a man who shot a store clerk. He was, apparently, he was copycatting a scene from a violent movie. Let's see, what was the name of the movie? The movie Menace to Society. Are you familiar with that film?
No, fortunately not.
Nor am I. Well, apparently, this particular murderer, Mark Brown, went into a 7-Eleven type store. What was it? Midway Market, a convenience store there in Youngstown, Ohio, and shot to death one Esam Salman.
When did that happen?
1994.
And he's just being executed now.
Just being executed now, unfortunately.
That's a tragedy.
The good news is he is dead. He was declared dead at 10:49 a.m. this morning. So that's the good news. The bad news is that it took 16 years to execute this. Listen to this. The records indicate Brown had been smoking cigars that were gouged out and refilled with dope and drinking wine laced with anti-anxiety pills back in 1994. So just a top flight type of fellow. I doubt he could have got into the Navy.
No.
Well, he was doing all this. He told some friends he wanted to copy a scene from the movie Menace to Society, and which is a Samuel L. Jackson movie, if that helps.
It doesn't help
me. Doesn't help me at all. Anyway, he went into the store and basically shot two people in just for kicks. And he's been allowed to live for 16 years there in Ohio. But the good news is that today he's met the Lord.
Yes.
He's found the Lord, or the Lord has found him, one of the two. There you go. So some good news amidst a lot of bad news. Now, there has been a lot of bad news, except for the economy. We're all so thankful that President Barack Obama has stepped in just in the nick of time to save the economy. And we're going to talk about that with Paul, and I'll probably commiserate with you here, Paul, as we celebrate the Obama economic recovery together. But first, could you just introduce yourself, maybe take a minute, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, Doug. Again, I want to say it's a great pleasure to be here today. It's the first time I've ever been on the show, and I'm really looking forward to it.
This is your first time on the radio?
In my life.
Well, you're a natural. Just go for it.
Well, I said my name's Paul. I'm married. My wife's name is Dawn, and we have two children. I joined the Navy back in 1990. I was living in Tampa, Florida at the time.
Yeah.
So that's 20 years ago from last month.
That's right. That makes you a lifer.
That means I'm now retired.
That's what we used to call you guys, was lifers.
I'm a chief petty officer, which is a senior enlisted rank.
And that's E7. Seven.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's way up there.
And in the Navy, I did many things. I was a Russian interpreter, primarily, a Russian linguist and interpreter. I was also an aviator. I did most of my work on board naval aircraft, and I did a lot of flying with the Air Force, too. I've flown from aircraft carriers a couple times.
Oh, have you experienced a tailhook landing?
Yes, I have.
Oh, neat.
It's as exciting as it might seem.
Is that right? I've seen it on video. It looks like you hit the deck pretty hard,
yeah,
it looks like.
You want to make sure your seatbelt is fastened.
Yeah?
Yes.
And you don't want to eat a big meal before you go do something like that.
No, you don't. Normally, you'll go from about 135 miles an hour to zero instantaneously. So.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah.
So you've done some intense things. You've got some intense experience.
Yes. I've been very grateful to the Navy. I've enjoyed it very much, and I'd recommend it to anyone. The Navy has been very good to me, and it allowed me to travel around the world, all over Europe, to Russia, the former Soviet Union,
yeah,
Asia, around the country, too, of course. And it allowed me to meet my wife, of course,
is that right?
Which is the best part.
That's neat. Now, the Navy did that for me, too. I was in a small part of the Navy. Best part of the Navy. Yeah, the Marine Corps.
The Naval Infantry?
Yeah. And they allowed me to meet my wife, which I'm forever indebted to the Navy for that. So,
yes.
So you were a Russian interpreter. You joined in 1990. That's like you joined right at the beginning of the collapse of the Soviet Union, sounds like.
Yes, that's right. For my profession, there's about 2 years of preliminary training to go through before we're ready to do the job.
Did you have to learn Russian, or did you already speak Russian?
Well, I knew Russian. I'd studied it in college
for
6 years. I had a master's degree before even joining the Navy. So it was most like a refresher.
Yeah.
I finished the course in half the time.
Oh, cool.
In the Navy. And so, well, I was about 2 or 3 months from the end of this 2-year initial training session when the Soviet Union collapsed.
Oh, man.
So I was just about ready to go out and do my job, and then the threat diminished considerably.
But thankfully, you were working for the federal government, so they found something else for you to do for 20 years.
Yes, they did.
Well, fortunately, someone had to still keep an eye on what the Russians were doing, and so you were a part of all that.
Yes, I was. Let's see, about 10 of my 20 years in the Navy, I worked out of Fort Belvoir, Virginia, with an agency. We would implement the treaties with the Russians, the arms control agreements. And we would go over there and inspect their sites, and they would come over here, and we would escort them when they came here. And I worked as an interpreter for our leaders, military leaders, diplomats, whoever was on the team. Because they didn't speak English and our people didn't speak Russian.
So you're implementing the treaties, like Reagan's Trust and Verify. You were part of the Verify part.
Yes,
of all
that's
that.
Right.
Well, very good. Well, we appreciate you having done that. Seeing as there were no nuclear attacks on the United States the entire time you were in the Navy, I'd say you were doing a pretty good job.
No problem.
Yeah, good work. Now, what brings you from You're retired from the Navy. When did your retirement officially take place?
Monday.
Monday, this past Monday?
Yes, February 1st.
So you're fresh out, huh?
Yes, I am.
Wow. And so what brings you from Virginia to the high mountains here in Denver, Colorado?
Well, my last 3.5 years were, as I think I mentioned, in Fort Belvoir, Virginia. And my wife and I were looking forward to coming out here. For me, it's been a dream of about 12 years since January 1998, when I first discovered Bob on TV.
Oh.
I was living in Hawaii, and I began to follow his ministry, and I've been a great admirer of him and his ministry. And I was just waiting for the time when I could retire, counting the days until I could retire and move out here. Along the way, I met my wife, and she also has become an admirer of Bob and his ministry. And so then the time came. Last November, I began what we call terminal leave in the military. And,
terminal leave.
And then we moved out here, and so we're really happy to be here. It's been a dream.
So the ministry has brought you out here.
Yes, Bob and his ministry, generally, and specifically the personhood campaign that's going on now, too.
Awesome.
In particular, yeah.
Now that you bring that up, let me interrupt quickly with personhood news. The signatures are coming in. They're not coming in as fast as I would like to see them come in, but they are coming in. If you have a petition, and it's half full, it's got 10, it's got 5, it doesn't matter, get it into Personhood Colorado as soon as you can, and you can get another petition. There's still time for us to drop one in the mail to you for the folks over at Colorado Right to Life. You can call them at 303-753-9394. Now, this is it. This is crunch time. For those of you who've been waiting for the future is now. This is the final weekend that we can gather signatures for the Personhood campaign. We have operations scheduled for this evening. We have operations scheduled all through the weekend at churches and at various events throughout the state where we'll really putting on a full court press here. Those of you who have been out there, who's to say you can't get another 50 or 100 signatures over this final weekend? The drop-dead date to put those in the mail is Tuesday, February 9th from anywhere in the state of Colorado. Tuesday, February 9th, you want to get them in the mail. Call Colorado Right to Life to get a petition at 303-753-9394. And Lord willing, we'll be able to put this on the ballot again here in Colorado. I think I have a story here. Bear with me just a second, Paul. Here we go. From the Colorado Independent, a report today. Anthony Lane reports in the Colorado Independent, though Coloradans batted down the so-called personhood amendment in 2008 by a 73-27 margin. Gualberto Garcia Jones, director of the group Personhood Colorado, has observed the recent conservative resurgence, and he says, quote, clearly there's something that's happening in the electorate. So, Paul, I always like to say, whenever a Democrat wins, I remember when Bill Clinton won the White House, it wasn't like we thought he was going to lose, because we pretty much knew he was going to win. And same thing with Obama. You went to bed the night before pretty much knowing you were going to have to wake up in the morning and face the fact that a liberal Democrat, Marxist child-killing fanatic, hell-bent on destroying the country, is going to win the election. But to wake up the next morning and actually see it and know that it's true, it kind of feels like a kick in the stomach.
Yes, you know? It's quite a setback.
Yeah, it hurts. But one bit of positive mental attitude that I was able to apply to the whole situation was the fact that knowing that a Marxist has been elected, at least the conservatives will start acting more conservative. Right?
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully.
And what you said is important, Doug. Specifically, he is a Marxist.
He's a Marxist.
And those words, communist, Marxist, those words have become unfashionable.
Yes.
Nowadays, it's blasé. But essentially, that is what he is. That's what his policies are like.
Yeah.
And we need to say that.
That's what he is. And what he's done is, now he's got the conservatives. Hopefully we're waking up a little bit and we're saying, wow, you know, the whole country could be destroyed in a matter of a few years with this maniac at the controls. So we see around the country some inklings that the conservative movement maybe is waking up a little bit. So we put our hopes in that to a certain degree. And, of course, I think that it's the personhood movement that's going to carry the conservative movement into a true ascendancy. But well, we've got to defeat all the conservatives who are against us. So we've got a lot of work to do in our own camp, or at least people who have, well, they're camping in our camp. I'm not sure if they're really in the camp. I mean, they're physically in the camp, but I don't know if they're spiritually and intellectually in the camp. But the so-called conservative movement, the so-called pro-life community, there's certainly a great bit of tension within that community, as I believe we're fighting for the heart and the soul of the conservative movement, a movement that has been taken over by people who would make merchandise of our soul. And we were warned about that by Jesus Christ our Lord, to beware of those who would make merchandise of your soul. And so we're fighting for the heart and soul of the conservative movement, and I believe that personhood is the vehicle by which we have the best chance for success. I certainly hope so.
Yes, it's sad, but it's true, it seems. A lot of conservatives, or so-called conservatives, are like what we would say lukewarm, perhaps.
Lukewarm.
They seem to pay greater heed to the Constitution, our man-made document, which is important.
Oh, sure.
But it's not as important as God's commands and the Word of God.
Yeah, it's not as important as the Spirit of the Lord that directed the men who put the Constitution together, at least a good number of them. You know, they were guided by their by the Spirit of the Lord and their religious beliefs, and they put together a fairly impressive document that's managed to hold the country together for a couple of hundred years. And you know, we'll see how all that goes here in the face of the onslaught of the Barack Obama administration. All right, now quickly, did I have anything here from the Independent? The reporter in the Independent points out that opponents of personhood, who've pointed out the bizarre consequences of the measure, including medical risks to women with ectopic pregnancies and threats to some type of birth control, could face a tiring round two. Well, we certainly hope so. Now, this is interesting because I had a conversation with a young lady. I was collecting signatures just the other evening, and a woman brought up this idea of ectopic pregnancies. Right? This is one of the straw men that our adversary throws out there.
I'm a little uncertain about that. I've heard of it. Could you tell me more about what that, yeah, what that is?
An ectopic pregnancy is when an embryo begins to develop within the fallopian tube instead of implanting into the uterus. And the result is fatal, at least right now in medical, at least right now, it's fatal 100% of the time. For the baby and for the woman if it's not taken care of. So this woman, she said to me, well, sir, do you know what this would mean for ectopic pregnancies? And I made sure that she understood what an ectopic pregnancy was. And I said, I said, here's the deal. I said, whenever there's an ectopic pregnancy, it is critical that the embryo be removed from the fallopian tube. Because if it's not, it will kill the mother and the baby. So the baby has to be removed. But the baby doesn't have to be affirmatively killed.
Right.
And I told her it's my belief that if we change the law so that medical science and medical practitioners have to respect the personhood of an unborn child, no matter how small, I said, if we change the law, someday, you know, right now when that embryo is removed, it's discarded. I said, if the law is changed and our hearts change, someday, maybe sooner than you think, we'll be able to remove those embryos from the fallopian tubes, and we'll be able to put that baby in some mechanism, some device, and that baby will come to term.
Right.
I said, that's what I believe. But right now, the hearts of the doctors are in the wrong place, and the law is in the wrong place. It's not encouraging medical science toward the advancement of preserving every life. So I told her, I said, well, it's always necessary to remove the baby. Sometimes it's necessary to remove the baby for the health of the mother. It's never necessary to kill the baby.
Right.
And a light went on. She said, you know, you're right. It's never necessary to kill the baby. I said, you know, we're not magicians. We're not going to say that this baby is going to magically live now that we change the law. But certainly, this law is not going to prevent a doctor from removing the baby in order to save the mother's life. I told her what this law is aimed at is the affirmative killing of unborn children. I said, this law is about ending abortion.
And if I could just make a suggestion,
yeah,
just a quick suggestion, something that's occurred to me is we should start saying murder more often than killing even, because that's what we're talking about. Killing the unborn child, it's a human being. So we're talking about murder. That's what we're talking about.
You're right.
So
the term I just used, the affirmative killing of an unborn child, right, that's much more simply stated as the murder of an unborn child.
We are talking about a human being. We're not talking about a tree.
You're right. You're right. Good point, Paul. See, this is why I like hanging out with people who are willing to pack up and move out here for the ministry.
Yes, it's glad. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you obviously have something on the ball. Now, tell me about the job search. How's the job search been going, Paul?
Thanks for mentioning that. It hasn't been going too well. A lot of people in the country, of course, are without work. So I apologize to the listeners and to you. I'm not trying to, you know, evoke any sympathy or anything, but
that's okay. We can have sympathy for you if you're out of work.
On the other hand, it's tough. I've submitted hundreds of applications, and
how many resumes are out there? Hundreds?
I've lost count after about 250 or so, and I've received maybe 30-40% no's. About half of them respond that I'm eligible, but not eligible enough.
Yeah, that hurts.
Because there are thousands of people that are applying for the jobs. And right now, maybe 10 jobs or so, I know my resume is sitting on the desk here in Denver or in Colorado Springs of a hiring manager, and I just hear nothing. And I'm getting a little discouraged. And, you know, like, I know there are a lot of other guys in the church who are unemployed, and I pray for them every day, too. I pray for all of us. But I'm at a point where I'm trying to figure out what to do, you know, You know, it's been our dream, my dream, for 12 years to move out here, but the dream seems to be slipping away somewhat. I cannot stay here if I cannot find work. Mm. And it's the same thing that other men are going through around the country,
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I can find a job eventually, but the sad part for me is that it may be somewhere else. Mm. I may have to move somewhere else to find work.
Now, we don't want to see that happen. Here he is, Paul Maleski, poster child for the Obama recovery, right here in the studio. All that hope and change is just, well, it's just passing you by.
It's not working for me.
How are you with the shovel? Because I keep hearing about these shovel-ready jobs that the Democrats are preparing, but I myself, I'm not that great with a shovel.
I've applied for jobs like that, and I'm always rejected. Maybe I'm overqualified.
You're overqualified for the shovel-ready position.
I've applied for jobs as waiters and things like that.
Now, you were involved in the intelligence community.
Yes.
What kind of skills do you bring to the table for a potential employer?
Well, firstly, as I mentioned, Doug, I'm a Russian interpreter.
So anyone doing business with Russians,
right.
They could use your help.
I don't imagine there's a lot of that going on in Denver, but if anyone has business with the Russians, if they need written translation or if they deal with them on the phone or in person, they need interpretation, I can do that.
Okay.
I was in military intelligence in the Navy, cryptology and military intelligence. So I've worked as an analyst, and I've also led intelligence teams in collection and management, analysis and reporting of intelligence information. So I can do that. I know there are some government agencies that may do that here, or maybe some private contracting companies. More generally, though, as a chief petty officer, senior enlisted, I've been a leader, a manager of people. I've led teams of up to 200 people. In this work, I've managed programs as a program manager. Projects, international diplomatic projects, dealing with the Russians in particular, and the European nations and Japan. So I can
Japan.
Yes.
Well, maybe you could be a part of the government's operations that are going on against Toyota right now. If there's an opening within the Department of Transportation on that team.
Well, we own a Toyota, and
that's right.
It's an outstanding vehicle.
We've been driving them for 15 years. I've never had a problem, but that's anecdotal. We don't know what all the data might bring. But you've got some skills, management,
yes.
Projects, project manager.
Yes.
Russian translation. We've got to try. If anyone out there has an idea of you can hire Paul or someone who you could give Paul's resume to, we need to keep Paul and his lovely wife, Dawn, and his two lovely children here in the great state of Colorado, because it would be a tremendous loss. It would be Colorado's loss and D.C., Virginia, something like that.
Yeah, sadly, we'd have to go.
It would be their game if you were to have to leave. But we would very much like to keep you here. So if you're out there in the audience and you can help, well, call the studio. You can call the studio at 800-836-8000. 9278. If you can point Paul in a direction or hire Paul or tell Paul, hey, you need to call this guy. So, well, we'll hope it works out, Paul. You know, there's no such thing as magic, so there's no magic solution. But if you're out there looking and you've got skills and you're well-spoken and very good-looking, by the way, so you seem like a guy who could get a job, especially amidst this booming economic recovery that has been set in motion by the anointed one himself, President Barack Hussein Obama. He signed your retirement papers, you say.
Yes.
So you've got his autograph. You must feel like you're at a rock concert or something.
Well, I feel like something, yes. I won't go into that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Paul, we're blessed to have you out here as a member of Denver Bible Church. We're blessed to have your help behind the scenes in the personhood effort, in the not-so-glamorous side of things, and your lovely wife, Dawn, as well. We're blessed to have you here, and we want to keep you here. So if there's anyone out there who can help, give us a call, 1-800-836-9278. Do you want to talk about some weird news?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. From the Boston Globe, Paul, let me bounce this off.
That must be weird if it's from the Boston Globe.
A U.S. tax court in Massachusetts ruled a couple days ago that a woman should be allowed to deduct the costs of her sex change operation. That's what I said. That's tax deductible now.
Okay?
So if you were... I'm just going to leave that alone.
I won't go.
Anyway, this person's name is Rihanna Hanahana Dahanabane. Rhiannon O'Donabane, who was born a man, sued the IRS after they rejected a $5,000 deduction that she had put on. I don't know if she filed her taxes as a woman.
Don't go into that.
It's kind of confusing. Anyway, this person, she claimed medical expenses, and they said no. They said it was cosmetic and not medically necessary. Well, now the tax court says that the IRS's position that the surgery was cosmetic and not medically necessary has been, quote, thoroughly rebutted by the medical evidence, unquote. So the IRS now says that there's medical evidence for basically mutilating yourself.
Why would that be medical evidence?
And then charging that to the federal government. Well, apparently there is a syndrome. Let me find it here, Paul, because I'm not an expert in these matters.
That explains it.
But there's a syndrome called GID, Gender Identity Disorder.
Don't break that out. Okay.
Gender Identity Disorder, which is a recognized... let's see here.
Recognized what?
It's a recognized mental disorder. Now, they can't be happy about that.
No, that's
so
discrimination.
So here's the thing. When they want to get a tax deduction, they're willing to say that they're mentally deranged. But in everyday life, they want us to treat them like they're normal people. Well, which one is it? It seems a bit opportunistic to claim now to get the $5,000 that you're mentally deranged.
Opportunistic is putting it politely.
It's just, anyway, she was 57 when she had the sex change. It says she had led a tormented existence, as a father, husband, coast guardsman, and construction worker. What a tragedy. All right, folks, call us. Help Paul get a job and stay in Colorado. Turn in your personhood petitions. Call Colorado Right to Life to get more. And KGov.com is our website.